Listen up. It's The Speakeasy with Annie Madden and Carla Treloar. Conversations in the margins. A comfortable space for uncomfortable topics.
Well, hello. We are back in the Speakeasy Lounge. How are you, Annie?
I'm very well today. How are you, Carla?
Very good. And today is Speakeasy's first birthday.
Wow.
Did you realise that? I meant to bring some party hats, but, you know, I didn't.
Totally is our first birthday, hey? So this time last year, wow.
Uh-huh.
How time flies.
And last year we launched on World Hepatitis Day with Greg Dore.
We did.
Giving us the lowdown on universal treatment access, which had started about 4 months earlier.
And it was so exciting, wasn't it? It was exciting time.
Yeah.
New frontier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was quite a little bubble of excitement in that period.
Mm-hmm.
So to mark that anniversary and the very important date in the hepatitis calendar, we are very pleased to have in the Speakeasy Lounge with us today the indefatigable Jason Grebley. Hello, Jason.
Hello, how are you doing?
Hi, Jason.
Hey, Annie, how are you?
So Jason is Associate Professor with the Kirby Institute and President of the International Network on Hepatitis in Substance Users. The man with fingers in a whole commercial bakery's worth of pies. We do wonder how, you know... You do it, Jason, but you don't have to reveal all the secrets of your boundless energy to us mere mortals.
So welcome to the Speakeasy, and we'll make it as painless as possible, Jason. So I'm going to start with a kickoff question, and that is, so it's been over a year now, as Carla sort of mentioned, for Australia's universal access approach to hepatitis C treatment with the new DAAs. So we've seen amazing data for Australia across that time. So what's been the impact of this model on how other countries are operating or might be planning to operate in the future?
Yeah, no, it's been amazing seeing the response internationally. I think Australia is very much the envy of a lot of countries internationally, and you know, all the efforts by the community and researchers and practitioners to really sort of advocate for access for all. I think a lot of countries are trying to look towards a similar model. It's been incredibly exciting.
Because in the UK, for example, they have limitations on who can get access by fibrosis score, is that right? Have they got any plans to change?
Well, it's amazing. You know, if you look at restrictions in Europe, they haven't, well, first of all, there's obviously some of the restrictions based on fibrosis stages.
Yeah.
But what's also amazing is the restrictions based on who can prescribe these new therapies.
Right.
So
we've
just done an analysis that was, we presented at the EASL, the International Liver Congress in Amsterdam, and of countries in Europe, 97% of the countries have restrictions based on specialist prescribing. So much different to what's happening in Australia, primary care providers and general practitioners can prescribe these new therapies. There's certainly a lot more restrictions in Europe. And, you know, just over half of the countries have restrictions based on advanced disease stage. It makes it pretty tough to achieve the WHO elimination targets with such restrictions in place.
Mm.
Yeah. And what about issues like, Carla, Jason, what about issues like drug use, active drug use, that sort of thing? Is that a criteria in many places still?
You know, fortunately, in Europe, it's less an issue. So in most countries, I'd say about 80% of countries, do not have any restrictions based on drug or alcohol use. But, you know, places such as the United States are actually still pretty appalling in terms of the restrictions around drug and alcohol use. And, you know, even people on OST can't get access to these new therapies, irrespective of drug use. And, you know, I think it's almost, it's a bit of a human rights violation in terms of, even people with advanced liver disease that have on OST, or, you know, even people with recent injecting, can't get access to these new medications, which is, it's really unfortunate.
What about countries in the kind of middle band, like Mexico or China or Brazil, India? What's going on there? I haven't heard much about that.
You know what? That's a really great question, Carla. I actually don't know what the restrictions are like in some of those countries. I'm not sure.
Mm. So you mentioned WHO elimination targets. Do you want to fill us in on what they are and how we're going, what's going to happen?
Well, yeah, so it's pretty ambitious targets for, and so the WHO's look towards reducing the number of new cases by 90% by 2030, and they want to see increases in the proportions of people diagnosed up to 80% and the numbers treated as well, similar amounts. And so I think, look, it's pretty lofty goals to be achieving that. Yeah. And with the restrictions in place, it's going to be pretty tricky to sort of achieve that.
So we're in Australia without restrictions. What are we yet to turn our attention to work really strategically towards elimination goals, in your opinion?
Look, you know, I'm Canadian, but I've lived in Australia for almost a decade or just over a decade. And, you know, I've been incredibly fortunate and proud to be a part of, you know, what's been happening in Australia over the past year. You know, we've been able to, you know, in 2016, between March and December, we've managed to treat 32,400 people with the new DA therapies, which is just absolutely, you know, amazing.
Yeah,
you know,
incredible.
That represents, you know, we estimate 14% of the of the diagnosed pool. Okay, so that's exciting. And, you know, some of the big wins, I guess, is, you know, the fact that if we look at it's broad prescribing. You know, in December, almost 30% of all prescriptions that were written by a primary care provider or a GP, which is fantastic, up from sort of 5% in March, which is amazing. But we have seen, you know, it's tailed down a little bit in terms of, I think we've stabilized in terms of the number of people we're treating per month. So, you know, you ask, you know, what's left to do. I think what's happened is as the people with advanced disease that are in sort of liver clinics and specialized centers in hospitals, you know, those people that are sort of ready and waiting as we've treated those individuals that have been waiting, I think we're now focused on the more sort of marginalized populations. So people in drug treatment clinics, people that are attending needle and syringe programs. And so that's really, I think, where we need to be thinking about, you know, how to engage the more marginalized populations in care. So that's our task ahead, I guess, for the next 5 years and thinking about ways to do that.
Tricky area. So you, Jason, Carla mentioned that you're president of INSU earlier. So you've got your conference coming up in New York, I believe in New Jersey. So can you tell us a little bit about what you see the highlights from that conference, and, you know, are there any particular presenters or papers you're really, you know, keen to check out yourself or excited about?
Well, that'd be my paper, Annie, just saying.
Of course. Well, you know, that goes without saying. Anyone else?
After that, you know, whatever.
Yeah, actually, it's hilarious. It's hilarious, Annie, because being not from New York, I've realized sort of the mistake in terms of, you know, I naively thought, oh, you know, we'll save a bit of money, we'll have the conference not in Manhattan, we're gonna have it right across the river, a short ferry ride across. But it's been a world of pain. But it's also, I've been told numerous times how New Jersey is not New York. even though you can see the skyline.
I spent most of last night Googling what I'm going to do in the weekend after INSU whilst being in Manhattan.
Well, there's no shortage of amazing things to do in New York. Exactly. So I think everybody, we chose New York. Alan Litwin has been sort of a long supporter of he's part of the INSU board, and him and his team have done some pretty amazing work. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to have it in New York, even though people don't generally hold conferences there, and I understand now why, in terms of the hotel costs and logistics around getting places. But we hope that people, you know, overlook that a little bit and realize that, you know, we wanted to have it in New York because of that, those reasons. So look, it's shaping up to be a pretty exciting conference. We have some really amazing speakers lined up on the first day, really trying to get at sort of understanding epidemiology and public health, not just about hepatitis C, but really about drug user health more broadly. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things that I think INSU is really trying to embrace is the importance of addressing drug user health more broadly if we're going to have any hope at tackling elimination of hepatitis C. Mm-hmm. So really understanding the importance of having a strong foundation of harm reduction and you know, enhancing access to opioid substitution therapy and needle and syringe programs. So we're going to be having some talks about that. Some exciting data from Sarah Larney and Louisa Degenhardt, who are from UNSW here, around some of the work they've been doing around, they've been updating the estimates of injecting prevalence and also of HIV and hepatitis C and hep B among people who inject drugs. So it's very exciting. Some stuff about some of the horrible things that are going on in the US right now around drug overdose and fentanyl and carfentanil, which I think you guys were actually talking about on one of your chats the other day. I heard you
talking
about the drug testing that was going on in Vancouver. Yeah. I do listen.
Oh, you listen to work to work out what to do to cut here, right?
That's right. You pass. Okay. Gold star for you.
So, but yeah, there'll be some stuff around harm reduction in the afternoon. Some interesting stuff from what's been going on in Indiana and Illinois and Kentucky around the outbreaks of HIV. A little bit about testing, linkage to care, management to hep C, a little bit about reinfection, prisons and the important role that they play around hep C elimination efforts. And yeah, there'll be lots of other exciting stuff to check out.
Sounds fantastic. Really great.
And what about the partnership with INSU and International Journal of Drug Policy? There's a special issue launched as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's been really exciting. You know, we're really thankful to Tim Rhodes and the International Journal of Drug Policy for giving INSU the opportunity to partner. You know, it's been great. Carla's been a co-editor on that, and it's been as Carla knows, it's been a pretty monumental task. I think we must have had over 75 submissions, and we had limited space, so I think we have about 25 articles, but I think it's a pretty nice mix of epidemiology, clinical research, some social sciences. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts, Carla? Any highlights?
I mean, it's an exciting thing, I reckon, to put together and to tie it to the conference, so you can make a splash on both sides of the equation, right? Do the cross promotion, as it's called in the business. Just check it out. You know, it also gives people who can't go to the conference a way into hearing about, not that they're exactly tied in terms of conference presentations to the journal articles, but a way to, you know, have something else to go and read that the people who are involved in the conference have also had some thought about what's in the special issues.
So. But you mentioned that actually, you know, if you think about a lot of the articles that are being published, they actually came from, a lot of them are actually work that evolved from Oslo, the INSU conference last year in Oslo.
The previous conference.
And so, you know, it's great to see. And what I think one of the really nice things is that we're starting, you know, to see some real world data around treatment, DA outcomes in people who inject drugs that are treated in the community, showing that the responses to therapy are just as good as what we've been seeing in the clinical trials. So that's exciting. And hopefully building that evidence base to get those restrictions that are in place in many countries removed. So we still have a lot of advocacy to do around that, but hopefully all that data will help to remove those restrictions.
We've been very generous and very politic in your response of who is it worth checking out at the conference. I'm going to, when we turn off the microphone, I'm going to dig later because I'm going to do some vox pops for the podcast at the conference. So I want to know who to talk to, but also who to avoid.
And who are the stars who'll give you something?
That's right. I only want the talent. Okay.
So where are we at?
Yeah, Jason, like you have so many projects on the boil at any one time. So we kind of threw it open to you. What do you want to talk about that you've got on your own research agenda at the moment?
Well,
he's looking to the skies going, geez, where do I start?
Look, you know, I think in terms of stuff that's coming out, in terms of that's ready to be sort of published, mm-hmm. I think one of the most exciting trials is some work that we've been doing looking at treating hepatitis C among active injectors with the new DAA therapies, and in particular two studies. One is called the Simplify study, mm-hmm. Looking at sofosbuvir velpatasvir for 12 weeks in a number of, well, Australia, Canada, US, and Europe. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing the responses that we've seen. So both that and our DEFEAT study, which is looking at the 3D combination. And it's actually, with respect to Simplify, it's just been amazing. We haven't reported the results of DEFEAT yet, but we had a sustained virologic response of 94% in people with recent injecting. So again, hoping, you know, to build that evidence base. So that's stuff that's kind of just coming out. I would say that another really exciting project is another one that Carla's involved in. Carla, we collaborate quite a bit.
Yeah.
Carla's a great collaborator.
Oh, Jason, right back at you.
And yeah, we're just embarking on a really exciting project in partnership with New South Wales Health, with the New South Wales Users and AIDS Association, Australasian Society for HIV, Viral Hepatitis and Sexual Health Medicine, and Hepatitis New South Wales. We're going to be looking at a sort of test and treat type initiative where we're going to be rolling out point of care hepatitis C RNA testing. So it's very exciting. That's one of my passions right now is point of care testing. We can do off a finger stick of blood, we can now test for the Hep C virus and get a result back in about 60 minutes. So it's pretty cool. And with FibroScan, and we'll go into clinics, about 25-30 drug and alcohol clinics and needle and syringe programs in New South Wales, Queensland, and South Australia, recruiting somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 people as a way to sort of enhance testing and treatment uptake in people who inject drugs. Right. So I think that's one of my, you know, Carla's going to be, you know, you're going to be doing some really fantastic social research, trying to understand barriers to care. I don't know if you'd like to maybe talk about some of that work that you're going to be doing, Carla?
Not really.
No.
This is your show, Jason, your show.
But so the point of care testing stuff is really interesting, isn't it? Because as for those who are listening, as I understand it, it's currently not sort of what they call registered, hey, like through the TGA. So will this study help to provide data that hopefully makes that a reality? So it's available outside of clinical trials, or,
you know, it's a really interesting testing? Question. We are looking to have quite a large sub-study as part of this, where we're going to collect paired blood samples through venipuncture, and which will provide the ability to validate this test, and it might actually inform some of the work in Europe. What it's called, there's a thing, it's called CE marking, and that's the approval process for these tests in Europe. So it might actually inform some of the dossier that goes in for CE marking for Europe. And some of this data may be useful for TGA submissions, but that's not why we're doing it. I think sometimes we do need to be a bit arm's length around in terms of the company, and, you know, they have their own separate process that they need to go about to submit to TGA and whatnot. But, you know, it should at least, you know, it'll provide more data in terms of expanding point of care testing globally.
How useful it can be.
And they are working on trials. I think the company is, the name of the company is called Cepheid, and the test is called the Gene Expert. It's actually a pretty neat device because it's actually multi-purpose. So it's being used all over the world for tuberculosis, HIV. I've actually even heard that, you know, they can detect anthrax. So, in post offices in the US, you can, for mail. But it's a cool machine. They've been modifying it. They've got a version that you can test off venipuncture. We've been working with them to look at a finger stick version of the cartridge.
Yes.
I guess the benefit of that is multiple in that, you know, dropping things, it if you can use just a finger stick, it allays the concerns of people who have worries about getting blood out of veins for lots of different reasons. And then it's a rapid test, and about, rather than having to come back for another draw, for a second blood draw, for RNA testing, it all gets done on the day. And people get their result in an hour. You see,
it's fascinating. Yeah. Actually, we've one of my PhD students, Sarah Badges, has been looking at. We've been doing some work looking at the acceptability of the point of care, and so we've been asking people, you know, which do they prefer? Mm-hmm. And look, not surprising. Well, it is a bit surprising, but what's not that surprisingly, more people preferred the finger stick than getting blood taken from their arm, and the reasons why. They said they would prefer the finger stick was because, you know, the nurse usually has troubles taking their blood because sometimes, you know, among people who inject, sometimes venous access is an issue and venipuncture is a bit more tricky. And what was really interesting is then we also asked the people who preferred venipuncture why they preferred venipuncture.
Yep.
And they felt because they thought that the results were more accurate.
Right. Yeah.
So I think we just need, we have a little education that we need to be doing to let people know that the finger stick version
is equally accurate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I think as these new technologies come out, that'll be one of the education pieces that we might have to address. But it was kind of neat.
And presumably this sort of technology, going back to your earlier point about highly marginalized communities and sort of reaching people who are not yet engaged with care, hopefully these kinds of technologies can help shorten that period, hey, and reduce that loss to follow-up type aspect, the people kind of don't maybe have a test and then have to come back for a further test and all of that, they just end up not coming back.
Yeah.
Because life takes over.
Yeah, absolutely, Annie. And, you know, I think, you know, that goes on to another project that we're just about to embark on. Where we're going to be doing a test and treat type approach through needle and syringe programs, but in collaboration with the New South Wales Users and AIDS Association. And for those of you who don't know, that's a community-based drug use organization, and AVIL, which is, you know, peak body for injectors nationally. And Annie used to be CEO of AVIL, didn't you?
That's right. Yeah, I was.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're collaborating.
So, and that project,
yeah? Yeah, so we're collaborating with them, and we're going to be trialing a project where we do point of care hep C RNA testing with peer facilitated treatment and testing in collaboration with drug user based orgs as a way to engage people in care, because we know how important that the community is in terms of supporting people through both testing and treatment. So that's kind of next on the cards, which will be it'd be an exciting project.
Excellent. Sounds good.
Yeah.
So what is it about hep C that gets you out of bed in the morning and gets you into work?
Because
you've dedicated so many hours of your life to this over the last decade.
No, first of all, it's a really fun area to work in. I think the population, going back to the days working in the downtown east side of Vancouver, it was fantastic. It's, I used to do peer support work on Fridays, so we'd kind of teach people about hepatitis C, have a bit of a chat, bring them in. And that was at the time of, the interferon-based therapies, which were just horrible. And the number of times that you'd get people come up to you after, like, a group session, and they'd say, oh, you're the first person that's even ever, like, taken the time to, like, have a chat about this and explain this to me, and or you're the first person that's ever cared. And so it's a pretty amazing. I think you get a lot back in terms of working with with people inject. So yeah, I think that's pretty gratifying. And research is just a pretty fun thing to do, I think. It's pretty gratifying. You get to choose your own job, you get to travel a lot, you get to meet lots of amazing people.
Yeah.
Academics is a pretty fun area. It's hard.
Brutal.
Yeah. But you do get to, follow lines of inquiry, don't you? And look into something that is of interest or something that can help people, as you say, and make the world a better place.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting because I was this close to going into business.
Oh, right.
And then ended up, I was working for a sort of a failing biotech company and then moved into doing HIV related work for this biotech company. And then it was, opportunity presented itself to do a master's, and then I was kind of hooked.
Mm. Well, you know, if we do reach the elimination goals, Jason, you'll be far too young to retire. So keep that business option open.
For No. It's gonna be all about drug user health, Carla. Yeah, that's my eyes are
Plan B.
No. I think it's really really important. There's still a lot of work to do to support in enhancing drug user health, and it's pretty sad what's going on. You know, I was recently at the harm reduction conference, which, Annie, you were reflecting on some of the findings from that. But it was, it's really sad in terms of what's going on in a lot of countries around sort of criminalization of drug use, and it's amazing. So I think there's a lot of work that we still have to do to improve drug user health. And
I often talk about it, Jason, as sort of really one of the most social, most pressing social issues of our time, and I really believe that actually it's one of the unresolved, big unresolved social issues, and it's time. You know, it's really time that a whole lot of evidence and practice and knowledge and humanity comes together and changes that situation, because it's unnecessary and super harmful.
And there's just, the other thing, Annie, it's just crazy the lack of evidence-based sort of, the policies, just in terms of how, they're lacking in evidence base. And it's just amazing based on ideology.
Yep.
Anyway, so we could go into that. That's a whole nother sort of session.
This is one area of health where people feel that they are entitled to stick their nose in and make decisions about that absolutely affect people's lives and futures and the futures of their children and their children's children, because they feel that's the right thing to do regardless of any existing evidence or evidence to the contrary.
That's what we need to change. Yeah.
Well, Jason, thanks so much for sharing our first birthday with us. It's very exciting.
It's an honor to be invited for the first birthday. That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's what we've got to do, Annie, is sort of generate this sense of, the elite chosen few in this studio.
Exactly. And we've got more interviews to come this year yet.
Yes.
So here's to our second year. And thanks to everyone who's been on the first year, along with Jason and everyone before. We've done some really amazing interviews actually already. Yeah. And
so,
we've got a lot of people increasingly coming up to me saying that they like tuning in. So
I had one person say that to me the other day in Melbourne. That was very exciting.
Yeah, I get a few people doing that. So, I know you haven't had so many.
No.
So we're going to keep on going, and we've got more interviews to come soon. So Stay tuned, everyone, and we might look through what we've talked about with Jason and see if there's any links or interesting information. We can certainly put any information about the conference and those sorts of things.
Yep.
But otherwise, we'll thank Jason very much for the interview, and we'll see everyone soon on our next episode.
Bye.
Bye now.
Bye, guys.
For more information about this podcast, our guests, and upcoming episodes, head to http://csrh.arts.unsw.edu.au.